This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's for now it's a little bit confusing and people are really worried that what will happen.
That's VOA's Abdurrahman Dia talking about reports that the DRC is postponing Sunday's planned presidential election. Details next.
Also, thousands of protesters are marching in cities in Sudan today, angry over rising cost and corruption. And amid Zimbabwe's crippling economy and acute shortage of foreign currency, teachers are demanding their salaries in U.S. dollars.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Confusion engulfed the DRC's presidential campaign today, with candidates saying the Electoral Commission chief told them the Sunday election is being postponed. There was no immediate public announcement, but word spread quickly, sparking a protest at a university and raising questions about when the long-delayed election will finally be held. President Joseph Kabila has said he will conduct a peaceful handover of power after 17 years. He was supposed to do that 2 years ago, but has postponed the vote twice already. The candidates told journalists the Electoral Commission blamed the delay on technical problems, a fire that destroyed thousands of voting machines last week, and an Ebola outbreak in the country's east. Yesterday, the Kinshasa governor canceled the last 2 days of campaigning in the capital, saying he had information that rival political camps were planning a confrontation in the streets. VOA reporter Abdurrahman Dia is in Kinshasa, and he spoke with my colleague, Paul Alexander.
According to several people that we have contacted, some candidates are coming out and saying that the president of the Electoral Commission has told them that he is not able to hold the election on Sunday. And others are saying that they don't even have another date yet. So it's for now, it's a little bit confusing, and people are really worried that what will happen, because already at the University of Kinshasa, we are told that the students are protesting and that they are asking for elections to be held, and the traffic has stopped.
And how are the students hearing about this?
The local media are kind of following this and not trying to be careful, because they don't have the official statement yet. So everybody, but on the social network, it's been going on since this morning that the election could be postponed. And so people are kind of into the mood for that.
Considering how Kabila has held on to power and delayed the election so long already, are there concerns that this could end up being a very long postponement?
It could. But then we have to remember that the government did not want any international help for this election, arguing that it was a matter of sovereignty. But at the same time, if you reject international help, then you should be able to do a good job at holding the election with everything being ready on time. And it doesn't look like it's the case here. So that is drawing another question from some people, asking if this was the real reason for rejecting international aid. If it was probably because they just didn't want to hold the elections. So that is one of the theories out there. They knew perfectly that they could not do it by themselves, because it is a huge territory and they have 40 million voters.
Now, I understand that Failu had been talking about filing a lawsuit over the early end of campaigning. This seems to sort of have overwhelmed that possibility, but do we know if he still plans to do that?
We haven't heard anything so far. He was allowed to get into his home late at night, last night, but then today we are told that he was supposed to get out of town again, try to campaign, since he was not allowed to campaign in Kinshasa. So we haven't been able to reach him. We tried. So I guess all of the headquarters are trying to assess the situation and how to respond to it.
Any idea what's next?
It's a difficult question. It will depend on how determined the people are to make sure that elections are held, and also how determined the government is to make sure that nobody comes out on the street. So it could be confrontation. It could also be some wisdom from people deciding that they don't want to die for this anymore, because there have been so much trouble in the country. Well, it's an evolving situation, so things could change in a matter of minutes. And last night, actually, when the first rumors of a postponement have been distilled on social media, the two officials from the Electoral Commission came out on local media and saying that everything was ready, and even the ballots, everything was into all the provinces. And today we are hearing that that maybe another plane from South Africa is coming on Saturday. So they don't even have coherence in their messaging. So they're contradicting themselves in so many levels.
That was VOA journalist Abdulrahmani Dia in Kinshasa speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander.
Thousands of protesters are marching in cities in Sudan today, angry over rising costs and corruption. Reuters news agency reported that police fired tear gas at hundreds of protesters within a kilometer of the presidential palace in Khartoum. Some were chanting calls for the government to fall. Demonstrations were reported in the cities of Atabar, Port Sudan, Barbar, and Nohud, among others. Many Sudanese are angry over rapidly rising prices and extreme shortages of bread, fuel, and other basic goods. Inflation has topped 60% as the government this year cut subsidies. The economy has deteriorated over the past several years after South Sudan became independent, depriving Khartoum of much of its oil revenue.
U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton blamed the U.S. Security Council for not being able to solve the decades-long dispute between Morocco and the Polisario Front over the Western Sahara. Nevertheless, he supports a referendum of self-determination for the Sahrawi people. Samir Bennis is a political analyst with a special focus on the Western Sahara. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi and said that while Bolton is correct on the need for a different Security Council approach toward conflict resolution, he disagrees with the call for the referendum.
The United Nations, and especially the Security Council, need to reconsider their approach towards conflict resolution, and not only regarding the Western Sahara issue, but also regarding all issues on the UN agenda. The same can be said regarding the Western Sahara question. Finding a common ground on the way to reach a political solution has been very elusive so far. Even though the UN has failed for the past 27 years in applying approach of self-determination, it has still not realized urgency of moving away from the sacrosanct concept and look for a more realistic alternative.
Moroccan Foreign Minister Nasser Bourita reintroduced the Moroccan plan for autonomy, while the chief of Polisario delegation, Katri Adoua, insisted that the Sahrawi people have the right to self-determination. How could the UN envoy reconcile such maximalist positions?
I believe that it is high time that the UN moved from its fixation on the concept of self-determination and come to terms with the fact that we can't apply to today's conflict the same approaches of the 1960s and 1970s. The UN cannot keep calling on the parties towards finding a mutually acceptable political solution while it maintains the option of self-determination on the table. The UN is fully aware that Morocco would not change its position, that independence cannot be an option. Therefore, the UN has to be more creative and more realistic. But there is a silver lining in the way the Security Council has treated the conflicts in the past 2 years. For the first time since the beginning of the political process in 2007, the Security Council has called on the parties to work towards finding a realistic, practicable, and enduring political solution. The Security Council seems also to be more amenable to Morocco's repeated calls to include Algeria fully in the political process. Resolution 2440, adopted in October, includes Algeria in the conflict. No political solution can be reached as long as Algeria does not fully partake in the political process.
Given the previous position of the U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton on the conflict, leaning towards supporting the referendum of self-determination, how would you expect the U.S. role to reach a workable solution?
Bolton is known for favoring the holding of a referendum as a way to end the Western Sahara conflict. He has made this clear in his memoir published in 2007. The main reason why the UN has failed to achieve a solution to the conflict is its obstinacy to keep the referendum among options on the table, while it is aware that a referendum was not possible because of the irreconcilable positions of Morocco and Polisario on who is Sahrawi and who is eligible to take part in such a referendum. Any attempt by Bolton to revive option of the referendum would be counterproductive and would set back the political process, and it will also endanger all the efforts the UN has made in the past 11 years to move the political process toward a political solution. The U.S. administration should draw the lessons from the South Sudan precedent. Self-determination was among the main principles used by the former U.S. administration to justify support for the aspirations of South Sudan's leaders. But 7 years after the independence of this country, it has neither provided the dividends of peace and stability to its people. The country has been mired in civil war for most of its existence. The U.S. should look seriously at this, at the South Sudan example, and it should serve as a sober reminder that principle of self-determination as necessarily leading to independence is neither a panacea nor a one-size-fits-all solution that can apply to all conflicts on the UN agenda, including the Western Sahara.
That was Samir Benes, a political analyst with special focus on the Western Sahara. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy.
Moroccan and Danish authorities today said there is terrorism link to the murder of a Danish woman and a Norwegian woman in Morocco on Monday. Moroccan police have arrested four suspects in the killing of Louisa Vestager Jespersen, a 24-year-old Dane, and Maren Uland, a 28-year-old Norwegian. Their bodies were found at a popular campground in the High Atlas Mountains. Moroccan officials said at least one of the suspects had affiliations with an extremist group, although the group was not named. And Danish officials said the killings can be considered politically motivated and thus an act of terror.
Amid Zimbabwe's crippling economy and acute shortage of foreign currency, teachers are demanding their salaries in U.S. dollars. And an industrial action by junior doctors is in its third week. Reporter Kuzayi's Vinavashi has details.
Dr. Mtabisi Bepe is the Secretary General of Zimbabwe Hospitals Doctors Association. He explains their action.
This is day 18. Our demands were straightforward. They were not new. We had been trying by all means to engage our employer. One of the demands was the issue of acute shortage of medicines, essential medicines and vital medicines, ill-equipped public health facilities, and the issue of poor remuneration.
As Zimbabwe's market increasingly demands dollars in cash, the doctors are like many government employees. Their income is paid electronically via the government's bond notes. They are supposed to trade on par with the US dollar, but the rate is much weaker on the black market. Senior doctors have since joined in the industrial action. Pepe says doctors are justified in their demand for US dollars.
This was out of the context that things now in the market in Zimbabwe are being charged in US dollars, and we felt that our salaries were no longer enough to even pay for rentals, for transport, things like that.
Bebe adds that the basic salary is about $329, which is worth less than $100 on the black market. Bebe says there has been little negotiations and they hear most developments in the media. Zimbabwe's finance minister, Mthuli Ncube, told journalists this week that paying salaries in US dollars is not feasible.
Government cannot pay any civil servant, anyone, in hard currency. Why? Government does not earn hard currency. Our job through the central bank is to allocate the little foreign currency that we earn to critical sectors.
Zimbabwe is a net importer and gets very little foreign currency. Most of it comes from mining and the farming sector. Recently, government announced it wants taxes in imported cars and other goods to be paid in foreign currency. Obet Masaraure with the Amalgamated Royal Teachers Union says it is only fair that civil servants should get paid in US dollars. The union's members have been walking over 200 kilometers to beg their push to be paid in US dollars. The marchers have been subjected to arrest twice, including yesterday. Masaraure says they expect to reach Harare today, where they will camp outside the Minister of Finance's office until their demands are met. Zimbabwe usually records a spike in road accidents during holidays, and the absence of basic medicine and doctors in hospitals spells a disaster on the horizon. For VOA, this is Kudzai Navashe from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. There is confusion in the DRC with candidates saying the Electoral Commission chief told them the Sunday balloting is being postponed. Thousands of protesters are marching in cities in Sudan today, angry over rising costs and corruption. And amid Zimbabwe's crippling economy and acute shortage of foreign currency, teachers are demanding their salaries in U.S. dollars. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Votes are being counted in Madagascar a day after the presidential runoff election. The French news agency AFP reports that officials released results from just 6% of polling stations today, indicating that André Rajoelina has the lead with 57%. His rival Marc Ravalomanana had 43%. Election officials say final results should be announced after December 25th. Rajoelina and Ravalomanana were the top vote-getters in November's first round. Since neither received more than 50%, a runoff was required. Ravalomanana was president of the nation from 2002 to 2009. He was forced out of office by street protest led by Rajoelina, who was then mayor of the capital. Antananarivo, the army, installed Rajoelina as president, and he governed until 2014.
Yesterday was International Migrants Day, and the head of the UN Migration Agency is urging nations to drop their negative perceptions of migrants and to treat them with dignity, respect, and as a benefit to their societies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the agency's headquarters in Geneva.
When the United Nations proclaimed December 18th as International Migrants Day in 2000, around 150 million people were on the move. Now, 18 years later, that number has grown to an estimated 258 million. Many people migrate to other nations for economic reasons, because they are desperately poor, are running from violence, or are imbued with a sense of adventure and entrepreneurship. The United Nations reports another 40 million people are internally displaced by conflict. International Organization for Migration Director General Antonio Vitorino says many people do not wish to leave their homes, but are compelled to do so by circumstances out of their control. For example, he says every year millions of people are forced to leave by climate-related disasters and natural hazards. His spokesman, Joel Millman, says IOM Chief Vitorino notes the mere act of migration exposes many people to great dangers.
IOM's data show that close to 3,400 migrants and refugees have already lost their lives worldwide in 2018. Most died trying to reach Europe by sea. Many others perished attempting to cross deserts or pass through dense forests seeking safety, far from official border crossings. These numbers, compiled daily by IOM staff, shame us.
This year's observance of International Migrants Day comes one day ahead of the formal endorsement at the UN General Assembly of the Global Compact for Migration. The compact was overwhelmingly adopted by most nations in the world earlier this month in Marrakesh, Morocco. Major holdouts include Australia, the United States, Hungary, Italy, Austria, and Poland. Vitorino sees the agreement as an important step toward providing the dignity owed to migrants. He says it also creates a space wherein a more balanced discourse and widespread cooperation on migration can take place. He says the compact stresses the need for all states to have well-managed migration. He adds no one state alone can achieve this. He says cooperation at all levels is fundamental to addressing migration. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Skip Sisk, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
The 2019 Voice of America calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture the beautiful byways of the United States, including magnificent photos of California's Big Sur Coast Highway, West Virginia's Highland Scenic Highway, and even the Cato All-American Road in Maine. Tune into Border Crossings and call to request a free calendar.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.